Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we speak to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. In this episode, Haley Linfield, Rick Hundy, Sandy Pluis, David Yates, and Judy Keitley joined me at the Goderich Library for a roundtable discussion. This time around, the group talks about finding time to write when life is busy, how to create good characters, the dangers of an author getting too attached to a character, and who their favorite characters have been in their writing. Enjoy.
Can we go back to something Sandy said about character? I just was curious about where do your characters come from? How would a character emerge in your writing, Sandy?
It's just the voices in my head, that's all.
Yeah.
I just write down what they're telling me. No, I'm kidding. I mainly my main characters are a combination of different people in my life, including myself. I'm often in my main character as well. I can't even really answer that, Rick. It's
Well, no, that's an answer. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
I think that could be typical.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what others would think, but
like the book that's coming out or that I'm launching on Saturday, the main character was probably based on me because when I was a kid, a story that I was fascinated with. And my main character is trying to get to the bottom of this story and find out what really happened, which we will never know because the people involved are long dead and nobody ever really knew the truth. So she was easy to write because she's so driven to find out what really happened. And I will never be able to know what really happened, so I could create what I thought might have happened or whatever.
Right.
But that character is very easy to write. Although it's not, definitely not all me. There's a lot of other aspects of her that have nothing to do with me.
Yes.
But, okay, what's the name of your book again, Sandy?
This one, it's Dancing with the Shadows.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Now just in one or two sentences, Keith. I'm fascinated. What's this thing here that the main character is trying to discover? What's this mystery?
Okay, so when I was young, my family bought the farm behind us, and it came with a history of a woman who ran off in the early 1900s and left her six-year-old son and her husband, and nobody ever knew where she went or why, or, you know, the rumor was that she ran off with the mailman, but my brother always said, he didn't believe that because the mailman looked like Ichabod Crane, he said. So, but anyway, I was just always fascinated. I wondered what would make a woman in that day and age, which was the early 1900s, not just run off, but leave her son behind. So that's where the story came from. But, of course, everything that happens in the story is totally fabricated.
Right.
And, and I was also very fascinated with this condition called synesthesia, and it's in the book too. Where your senses are all merged together. I think it's 2% of the population or something has it.
Your senses are merged together?
Yeah.
People say when they smell something, they see like a color.
Not
me, but a friend of mine says that she has.
That's what it is.
Really?
Okay. I've never heard.
I mean, there's different senses can be joined. Like in my book, I smell. She gets a color every time she smells something, and so it's associated with the smell is associated with a color, but it can also be like a noise. You get a visual of notes or symbols or whatever. It It's just one sense is merged with the other, and
never heard of
that. I've always been just really fascinated by that. So,
and your main character has this condition?
She does, okay. And the woman that she's trying to track down is her grandmother, who also had the condition, because it is hereditary.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I don't mean to talk about my book, but you were asking about where the characters come from, and
yeah.
In this case, that's where the character came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I don't know if this is off topic, but Sandy, did you find it hard to... a draft that I was working on that I've kind of abandoned for the time being. One of the characters was a mother who, not that she left her daughter, but didn't support her daughter in a certain way. And I found it hard to, I think part of the reason I stopped writing it was because I couldn't put myself in the mother's place to do that. So did you find it hard to write, like, from the perspective of someone who would leave the child, or is it more you get to create a story about what would bring her to do that, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, I ended up having a lot of sympathy for her, but it's because of the story I gave her,
yeah.
You know? But I know the real person, her husband was quite a drunk, so I think that's probably why she left. But nobody knows if he was a drunk before she left or after. So, but no, I didn't have any trouble. I felt a great deal of compassion for her. And I just felt she needed to tell her story. So, yeah. I have had characters, though, where you have to try and put yourself in there. And I'm sure we all have. You have to try and put yourself in their shoes and try to understand why they would do the things they do. And it's hard sometimes, especially if they're terribly abusive or, you know.
Yeah.
Doing despicable things that I would never dream of doing. It is hard. I totally agree with that.
Can't have all the characters as nice as us, though.
Right.
No. Yeah, you got to go to your dark side. There is a dark side. Always.
For sure.
So I guess to that point, that could be a question for everybody, is where do you get your characters? Like for me, I have the idea and I think of the plot and the story, and then characters kind of come later and they just get plugged where they need to go, basically. But I don't know how... Do characters come first for you? Do they come later?
I do sometimes. Actually, yeah, I do. Write up like a little bios for my main characters. So I have their little life story in front of me or at the back of my book. Because when I'm writing it, I don't want to interrupt my flow, because it's very much with me, it's the flow.
Mm-hmm.
To stop and think, okay, where did this person come from? You know, do they have a family? Geographically, where do they live? And all that sort of stuff. So I find doing a little bio of each of my main characters quite handy.
Mm-hmm.
And that also focuses me on the character. And but there again, you know, I'm talking about my murder mysteries more than anything. And they're pivotal because I have to know who did it. So who the baddie is right from the beginning, and develop that. But yeah, certainly having a little bio is quite handy.
Yeah, for my this book I'm working on, I did the same. I have three main characters and I did little bios, you know, this one has brown eyes and this one is tall or whatever, like just to easily, because yeah, I'm the same as you, don't want to interrupt the flow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
know in screenwriting. Sorry.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Go ahead, right.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say in screen too, or script.
Let's arm wrestle for it.
I was going to say in screen or script writing, they recommend that, Judy. They talk about the series Bible and how you should have a Bible of each character and like you say, where they came from, all the things that will probably never show up in the script, but you have to know them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when you were saying that, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, it does help develop the character. Even a simple thing like, yeah, went to university at Waterloo, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It just helps. And well, as you say, it may not even feature in the book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and, but the bio can help with the story, too, mm-hmm, immensely, because one of my protagonists' ancestors was in the Second World War, and I decided that the fellow that he rescued at Dieppe became the client of my detective in one of my stories, and that all meshed together quite nicely. When that kind of thing happens, it's fun. When you're asking about where they come from, to me, they can come from your own experiences a great deal. Sandy mentioned that. And when I worked on the assembly line at a Ford plant when I was in my late teens, I guess it was, and I met a guy that we became friends until he mentioned to me that he had murdered a guy. And he became a character in my books. He's a former biker, and he appears in most of my books now. But it's all based on this guy and I wonder why nobody, socialized with this guy at lunch or anything. It was just me all the time. And we'd be, and then he happens to mention that he killed this guy. And I don't know whether I was just a young whippersnapper and he was, you know, having me on, which I hope was the case, or whether it was the truth or not. Mm-hmm. But he was
Had he spent time in the prison?
No, he got away with it.
Oh, he got away with it. Oh, yeah.
That's what he told you. He told you he got away with it.
Oh yeah, he definitely got away with it.
Oh wow.
Now why would he tell me? But anyway, he's...
Well, it might have been an accident, or it might have been...
Something. Oh, no, he was intentional. He murdered him. It wasn't an accidental... He told me he did it. He said, yeah, the guy was after my dad, and I couldn't let that happen. So, yeah, he said,
wow.
Anyway, yeah. So sometimes that happens, too. And,
Had that changed your view of him?
Oh, yeah. I slowly removed myself from him. I stopped having lunch with him. I may have even went on the afternoon shift. I don't remember. I mean, this is a long time ago. But he stuck with me, and he became a character in my writing. And,
yeah. Well, you wouldn't have known unless he told you that. Like, he seemed like a pretty normal, decent guy.
Well, yeah. The reason I liked him, he was... Well, at the Ford plant in Windsor, about a third of the guys were in motorcycle gangs.
Yeah, my dad worked at Talbotville for 30 years.
Yeah, a lot of. And I thought, well, this guy's big. And we ended up in the piston plant, which is a feeder line. And there's time in between your activities to read. And we're both reading and chatting. And we got to know each other that way. So. And he was big, and everybody gave him distance. And I thought, I'm sticking with this guy because these other guys scare me.
Right.
So, I quit that job.
I guess you would. I got another good one that we kind of touched on it too, but this one's a bit more specific. Think about one central character or person in one of your books. And then tell us what makes he or she interesting. So most of you, if not all of you, have written more than one book. Any central person or character?
My character, Jack Beard, fascinates me because he's got all these weird obsessions. He's a baseball card collector. He's a former athlete. He drives people crazy because he's so annoying. I'm always finding him fascinating because he's got such a strange personality, but people like him anyway. He's quite useless as an investigator, but he seems to get the job done. He's morally ambiguous. He's got all these traits about him. He's solid though. He knows right from wrong. He just doesn't get to the right answer in a conventional way or in a way that might be acceptable in society. At least not always. So yeah, I like him. I like his obsessions and quirks. And he's a retro guy too. He's about 50 years old now, but he likes 60s and 70s rock. And he's always trying to decide who's the best, the all-time best lead singer and best guitarist.
But how much of you is in this character?
The music part a little bit. And I'm offended at your question.
I didn't know you were talking about
it. I was going to ask the same question, actually, yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to ask my wife, I guess. She thinks I've got some weird habits. Yeah. But that's good. I think it's good to be a bit weird, eh?
No, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm lying. I don't know what she'd say.
Right.
Yeah, there's the music part, his interest in sports and his, you know, tendency to do running and swimming and things. And, yeah. When I was younger, I did the stuff he does. You know, I did triathlons and that sort of thing.
So everybody in the village, well, friends, think that I am Rose Blair, because my Rose Blair murder mysteries, Rose Blair's the main character. Mm-hmm. And she's married to Tom. They think that my husband is Tom. They're not. We're not. I mean, obviously, but there are aspects of Rose that are me. I mean, I love to cook. Rose loves to cook. So there's a few things like that, but I mean, you write with experience, but you write best from your own experience. So I'm sort of projecting a little bit of myself into my main character. But I don't consciously write it thinking it's Rose is me. Mm. It's not a conscious thing. And Tom really isn't Philip, but there are a few little aspects there. Mm-hmm.
I found, so my other book, The Truth About Dandelions, the main character is, she's promiscuous, and I found, and makes bad decisions, made bad decisions. And
yeah, we won't ask you the question.
Well,
that
but I
head,
found,
so.
Like, I found, like, I want to say defended myself, but I don't like, I want to say I don't like, yeah. People make assumptions and like no, it's fictional and
yeah,
like
yeah,
yeah it's yeah. Not this isn't a story and you know and like there's you know someone who like I think started to get kind of weird guy who's sort of interested in me because he
yeah.
Kind of thought that oh maybe this is what
because of your book
because of my book this is what I'm like
I or, love the title Truth About Dandelions.
Truth About Dandelions. Oh, yeah.
That's a fabulous title. Really like that.
Did you know you can borrow snowshoes, ukuleles, and a telescope from the library? Ask our staff at your local branch for more details.
What about you, Sandy?
I think my favorite character has been the one, Ray from Beyond Reach. And it's because she is so rebellious and she is so, she goes so far off the rails as a teenager and a young woman. And she's a mess, but she's a lovable mess. Like you love her, you understand her, but she's just a mess. And I loved writing her. I loved writing the rebellious part of her, and she has this humor, dark humor that she directs toward herself mostly. But I just loved her. She didn't. She's one of those characters you don't create; they create themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. She created herself. I could have never created her. She she told me who she was. From day one, and I loved her. I still love her. She'll probably always be my favorite main character.
Can I ask a question? Sure, go ahead. Yeah. No, Damien, go.
Because you create characters, I have to define them.
Right.
Do not fiction. I define characters. I like to write characters, but you find that it's hard to be objective. Or if you really create somebody you like, it's hard to be critical of them. You can't look at them dispassionately or objectively. I sometimes think when I'm reading fiction, sometimes a lot of the authors are too sympathetic for the main person that they're writing about.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you can tell that they're kind of not being objective. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, actually. I think with her, I wasn't that kind to her at times. Like, she was a terrible mother. She had a child at, she was just turned 16. And she was just totally immature herself, and she shouldn't have kept that child. So she had parts of her that you went, you know, you just wanted to slap her for some of the stuff she did. But at the same time, it's such a fine balance, because you've got to keep the reader liking her enough that they want to continue reading the book, right? That they're drawn into her life enough. But at the same time, you've got to give them a lot of flaws, too. They can't be, like you're saying, you can't have this perfect main character, because it doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem, you don't believe the character. They're not credible if they're too perfect. So it's a real fine line, I think. I don't know if that answers.
It does.
Yeah.
Very good. It's a good answer.
Yeah, I struggle with that with the book I'm working on, that my one main character, I think my first draft, he was too perfect. Like, I was not objective. I was too kind to him. He was basically just breezed through too easily, which luckily my fiance helped point out that, no, he's got to get nicked up along the way, and he can't be so perfect. So yeah. I've, right in my edits, tried to fix that anyway. So, yeah, I know that can happen, it seems like, too easily once you...
Yeah, you get pulled into a character and then you're kind of overprotective of that character.
It's good and it's bad, isn't it? You grow to like your characters, but is that a good idea? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It probably is in the long run.
You'd like them to have them have faults, like they're not...
Yeah.
So when I read some books, I can almost tell that the author is kind of not objective or not. And let me tell, I don't know if you're in the, when I used to teach English, we used to do a book called The Wars by Timothy Finley.
Hi.
The biggest weakness of that book, if you were to ask me overall, it's a great book, but Timothy Finley liked Robert Ross too much. He didn't develop why everybody at the beginning of the book, a lot of people would have hated that guy. And he even said, you know what, when he was writing it, he's long since been deceased, but when he was writing it, he really kind of bonded, like Robert Ross was him. And he kind of, and you could tell if you're reading the book, and the kids would say, well, why at the beginning of the book, they all say they hated him. So many people said hated him, and then you have to kind of, well, in the last two pages, I kind of mentioned why, but the whole thing leading up to it, you've got this incredibly sympathetic type person that bonds with animals, but you forget that he killed two of his own men.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He was an officer and he deserted his troops in the field. And that only gets about two pages of coverage in the book. Like, I mean, it's almost like, okay, well, this is why they hate him. Then he wrapped it up. And that, to me, if I was critiquing that as a great book, but Robert Ross is way too sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't develop because he goes into a great deal of detail at the beginning why when people mention his name they kind of hiss or whatever. But I see a lot of other authors do that too.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what explains that.
I guess we should be. I don't want to get in trouble with your union, Hamilton.
No, it's not even quarter. We still got a few minutes. Yeah, it's okay.
I was just wondering with David's question. You know, you're creating an imaginary world, and you kind of live in this imaginary world, and so to some extent, the characters mean a lot to you, and sometimes, and it's fiction after all, so the real world doesn't have to apply. And if you changed your imaginary world too much, then perhaps the whole world falls apart on you. But I don't know.
But if I flip it around from where the reader's coming from,
yep,
you start to get these character, a character or something like that, the main character, that you think, God, this guy's too...
Well, it's the same on relationships. My PI has a long-term girlfriend, and I've thought many times that they either got to break up or she's got to be knocked off. But I don't have a lot of fans, but I've had people tell me, don't you ever do that, you know. I'd have a hard time doing it as well, because I like both these characters. They're part of my imaginary world, and so I can't imagine shaking the story, my series up that much. So, yeah, it's funny. Maybe there's not as much control as you would like as a writer over the things you're doing.
Well, and like Sandy said, it sounds like it's a fine line. That sounds like a fine line too, whether you keep a character or whether you change the imaginary world too much or not enough. Like, it could be tricky.
Yeah. But you need to change as well. My problem is, am I running out of gas? And how do I change things now? Do I drop this and do something else entirely? Right. I've got a number of short stories I've written. I've got a short story collection. Maybe I should go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can get stale too, right?
I don't write enough.
Yeah, neither do I. So, because how many books in your series do you have now?
Again? I think it's five or six. I think it's six, yeah.
Right.
Or is the sixth one the one I just wrapped up? I don't know, six or seven.
Right. Okay. Jeez, I should know that. I think I've only written the one or two, and you've only written two, is it?
One novel.
And Sandy's...
This new one's not a novel.
Right.
When you say only one or two, think of all the work.
Oh, yeah. I guess because Rick has...
I know Rick has done...
He's got five or six or seven. But, my book's taken 6 years. One book, so... It can take a lot of work, for sure. And I think you said it took 15 years for one of your books.
Well, I mean, I first started writing it, then...
But you had a family and a job.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple kids in there.
Yeah. So then it makes sense.
Marriage
it would take
and a divorce. And
right. It makes sense.
Do you know who Grace Metalius is?
What's that?
Do you know who Grace Metalius is? She wrote Peyton Place, the novel, in the 50s, and she did it when she had a house full of kids, journalists came to interview her, they couldn't believe that they were stepping over the pile of clothes and kids running, that she wrote this tremendously popular and great novel over that. And it was quite an accomplishment because, as you know, I used to have to write on Friday and Saturday night waiting for my kids to come home from when they were teenagers. That was therapeutic for me because I couldn't sleep because I knew what they do from what I hear in the daytime at school. And, pardon me, but that's it was hard. And I know when I was working on courses for school, a degree I was working on, like, and the kids were really little, how difficult that was to sit down and write essays and assignments and that sort of thing. It was just, and so when somebody says, I had little kids running around or something like this, and I was writing and I have to do this and get the multitasking, and I still had time to... You still have time to sit down and write. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is.
When my kids are small, I wrote after they went to bed, and I'd be up till like 2 in the morning, and then up with them at 7. And, you know, you're sleep deprived. You really are, but take the time. If you can get it, you take it.
That's right. And that's what Friday and Saturday nights are my time to... Actually, now that I'm kind of like retired, I slough off almost the whole day thinking I got to write something down, and I still don't do it until 8 or 9 or 10. Start at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, jeez.
But I find that the more time I have, the less motivated I am. The less chance I'm going to sit down and write. Like, I need deadlines. I need to be pushed, you know. I find I just get lazy if I've got too much time on my hands.
Mm-hmm. I can sympathize with that because, I mean, if I can delay it an hour or two or three, I will. I need to have those deadlines, and they have to be firm, because then I can. But if you're just, like I said, or you said so well, that the more time you have, the less likely you're going to do something or write.
Yeah. And then I wander around feeling bored. Oh, I got nothing to do. Yeah. I'm so bored.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this is one of your questions, but I'd be interested to know how everybody got started. What was the thing that got you rolling in the first place? What was the spark for everybody?
It's a good question. I didn't have that one.
For writing in general?
Well,
just started,
I just remember sitting down with my kids and making up stories, and then I would start to write them out. I don't know if anybody else had that experience, but that's
the first thing that I ever wrote, like a long thing that I had an idea was. So when I was a kid, we used to go on long boat trips with my parents, and we didn't. I don't know. Anyway, my sister and I had developed this game where we would use the face cards and decks of cards as characters, and we developed this whole world of the hearts and the clubs and the diamonds and spades
One summer when I was in university
and I was an au pair in France, and I had all this time during the day because I looked after the kids in the morning and then I looked after them at night, and I sat on the beach and I started writing the story of the hearts and the clubs and the diamonds and spades. And
really?
It's still it's actually on a floppy disk somewhere.
How old were you? Were you a kid? You were a teenager? Or?
When we were on the boat, this is before summer jobs, so we were...
10?
10 to 14, by the time we were 15, 16, we had summer jobs and didn't go on the trips anymore, but yeah, that was kind of our thing. So.
That's where it kind of started for you.
Yeah, and then the clubs are like the bad guys, and they have this two-front war with the hearts and the...
Right.
Anyway, and there was this whole thing, and it went on for years and years.
Wow. Sounds fun.
Wow. Yeah.
It's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what got me started, but I wrote a novel, or I was writing a novel when I was 8 years old, actually. And I don't know what triggered it. I don't remember. It was so long ago. But I do remember, writing this. I loved wolves back then. I was my favorite animal. So I was writing this whole story about this wolf pack, and there's a new cub, and that's the main character. And he gets into all kinds of mischief. I can't remember all the details now, but I do remember I was typing that on my dad's computer when I was 8, 9 years old, and back, that was the 90s, and the computer got a virus, and the story was gone. That's where I've been writing ever since I was young, so
I know, but about grade 2 I started writing on those long brown pieces of paper that were lined paper, stories on Davy Crockett and Colonel Travis going to the Alamo sort of thing. And then it kind of ebbed away. I didn't write for a while. And of course, at university, you got to write, and it's a dreadful task. And then this latest incarnation is, I think I mentioned it in another interview, it's just that an editor asked me, because I threw a few pieces into the paper way back 16 years ago, said, would you mind doing a regular thing in Huron County history? And I said, well, after 6 months, what are you going to write about? Then it became, as I said, a way to, for me to while away the time, so I'm not lying in bed while the kids are out. Mm-hmm. So I was up at 2 in the morning when they kind of stumbled in, sort of. And I just kind of enjoyed it. I rediscovered that I liked writing for the sake of writing. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And I don't know I don't know what way back in grade 2, other than my grandmother was a librarian, and we got all these books like discards and stuff like that, and stare at the pictures over and over again at the cottage and stuff, which is great. But it just something maybe you're born with, or some sort of innate thing, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people probably develop it over time, but I keep coming back to writing as a hobby.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you've never run out of material, have you? After, that's a lot of years to be producing that kind of product every...
But you see, now I want to kind of move out of there.
Yeah,
out of that groove, you know what I mean? I want to kind of do the writing historical fiction, because I said I'd love to create characters.
Yeah.
But right, but you kind of feel like, to be fair to the people that you're writing about, I can't make stuff up about them. Even if I don't like who they are or think, but you got to be fair to them and see the world through. Somebody else said it earlier, you got to see the world through their eyes.
Yeah.
How did you start writing, Sandy?
Oh, I was writing really terrible poetry when I was 8 years old, I think. I've always wanted to write. I don't know why.
Mm.
But, yeah, I started writing really bad poetry at 8, and then I got this, I don't know how old I was when I got an idea for a book, and told it to my family, and they all laughed at me. But I was probably about 10.
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to show you. Yeah. But, no, I don't remember not writing. It just was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
I still have journals of really bad poetry that I wrote when I was in university.
You don't have the courage to tell us.
No. I wouldn't show you the poems, though.
Whereas I think, like, my book, just what you were saying, Sandy, about telling your family, I didn't tell my family my idea for my book about wolves because I knew they would laugh at me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they made fun of me, but whatever.
Yeah.
That's what families do.
Well, maybe it helped to, you know, drive you forward to continue to write. Like you say, you're going to show them, so.
Maybe, yeah, well. It was my brother mostly. He was such a tease, and he was like 13, 14 years older than I was. And so one of the most memorable moments of my life was when I put out my first book, and he read it, and he liked it, and he said, "I don't know where you get your imagination from." And I will never forget that, because that was such a high compliment from him. It's because it was always him I was trying to prove myself to, I think. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
That's a nice memory.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. If you'd like to learn more about the authors or to purchase one of their books, you can visit their websites. For more information about the podcast, you can visit the library's website at HuronCountyLibrary.ca. Stay tuned for our next episode that we'll release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.